It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This next conversation contains references to subject matter that some listeners might find disturbing. A federal court ruling is raising new legal questions about child sexual abuse material generated by people using AI applications. Last week, a three-judge panel ruled that the First Amendment protects a person's right to privately possess images or videos of child sexual abuse if the material does not depict a real person and remains in the home. The appeals court ruled in favor of a La Crosse County man who was criminally charged with using a popular AI image generator to create thousands of explicit images of children. His charge of possessing the materials was dismissed, but he still faces prosecution for distributing them. The ruling raises questions about the constitutionality of a 2024 Wisconsin state law that banned AI-generated child pornography. Ben Sobel is an assistant professor of law at the UW Law School. He spoke with Rob Ferret last week about the case and related issues.
All right, this gets a little complicated pretty quickly. The court ruled on a part of the case here, the possession of artificial intelligence-generated child sexual assault material here, the possession in particular. What did the court decide and what was their reasoning here?
Sure. So it's important to emphasize that we're dealing with a narrow ruling. It's by no means a get-out-of-jail-free card for the defendant. The ruling is that the First Amendment prohibits the prosecution of or the criminalization of simple possession of obscene material in the home.
Now, this, I think, may have surprised some people. This is imagery that depicts child sexual abuse and children in sexual situations. The distribution, this person is still going to be prosecuted for that. The creation of this material, I understand, could still be prosecuted. What was the reasoning for saying here that the possession of what I think most people would agree is disturbing material is not prosecutable?
Sure. The first thing to do is to clarify that we're not talking about media that records an actual offense against children that took place in real life, against an actual identifiable child. That material is not protected by the First Amendment. The possession of that material can be criminalized. Instead, we're dealing with purely AI-generated virtual child sexual abuse material. And the rationale here is that it's, you know, too intrusive under the First Amendment to reach into the home and regulate what a person, you know, what media a person may possess there. But as you say, that rationale does not extend to regulating what kind of material someone distributes or produces necessarily or receives.
Now, this AI issue is pretty new, but you wrote a paper on this a couple years back. It fits in existing case law, the idea that possession of outrageous material that people might have. Even before artificial intelligence, there was some case law on this. How does what happened before we were thinking about AI inform what we're thinking about now that this material exists?
Right. So the case that we're dealing with today follows pretty naturally from earlier Supreme Court case law suggesting that you can't have a statutory prohibition dealing on with virtual child sexual abuse material. That's a case called Free Speech Coalition against Ashcroft, and it's around 20 years old. Now, the question that we're confronted with now is whether technological conditions have changed such that we should revise the analysis. And so top of mind for the judges writing that opinion and for other commentators is, for example, whether hyper-realistic imagery that is a result of technical progress is now posing a different and greater challenge than the types of imagery that were at issue in past decisions years ago.
Now, before we dig further into that, this is a circuit court. This is something that could be appealed by federal prosecutors to the Supreme Court. They are likely, it seems like, to get prosecutions for distribution and things like that. Do you think if this does go to the Supreme Court, based on the arguments you've seen, would the U.S. Supreme Court back up this decision, knowing that we can't always predict what they're going to do?
It's hard to speculate, and I'm certainly not a court whisperer. I think One clue would be whether the Supreme Court takes the case at all. I think there is an appreciable chance that it does, but of course the Supreme Court has discretion over what cases it hears. I think that if it doesn't take the case, obviously that's an indication of where it want thing, where it was going to choose to let things lie. If it does take the case, that would suggest that it's maybe more inclined to revise the precedents that the case relies on. That's sort of the best predictor I can have, but predictions are hard.
Now, in Congress and in state legislatures, including here in Wisconsin, lawmakers are worried about this kind of material. Laws have been passed, including here in Wisconsin. Do you see this decision putting those laws in jeopardy in their current forms?
Again, it's worth emphasizing again the narrowness of the present decision, really only concerning private possession of this material. So only insofar as the, for example, state legislation prohibits that, is there a constitutional problem under the reasoning of this case. And so there remain many avenues for addressing this material that are outside the reasoning of this case.
Now, possession of this material, well, now if somebody's using some kind of AI, I think in this case it was a text-to-image generator, they're creating this material. Does production fall into a different category than possession?
Right. So here, the analysis of the district court judge sitting here in Madison is illustrative. And so this judge, actually, if my reading of Wikipedia is correct, Judge Peterson has, I think, a PhD in film studies and was a film studies professor, so kind of uniquely qualified to examine some of the issues that this type of media presents. And that judge declined to say that this First Amendment protection extended to the production count. And that's not without some, you know, without observing some tension. The tension is, of course, if you are free under the First Amendment to possess obscene media, then presumably you couldn't say that it's illegal to draw an obscene drawing in the privacy of your home. Yet, I think understanding that we're dealing with a different technology and a really limited precedent from the Supreme Court, the district judge in this case declined to extend it to cover production.
And how about at the circuit court level then? Where is that part of this in the process, the production as opposed to possession?
Yeah, the production, there's no, at this point, that's
prosecutable.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, part of the production in this case is which AI company and their software that was used to produce this. Is there a thought that if a user uses a company's AI bot or chatbot or whatever to produce this material, that that company could be liable or prosecutable in some way?
Right. This is a notable case because, as I recall, it involved a program called Stable Diffusion, which is an open source image generator. And so that means that it's sort of much harder to control how it is used. So companies that have tighter control over their applications may impose more safeguards that prevent generating this kind of media. In contrast, something like Stable Diffusion, harder to regulate, harder to control the sorts of stuff that it produces or that people can tweak it to produce. One very important point on this precise angle: it was reported in, I want to say, late 2023 that some of the training data, and we're talking about billions of images, but among those billions of images for some of Stable Diffusion's training data were child sexual abuse images. And so while that issue wasn't implicated by this particular case, that is an additional wrinkle in this really complicated landscape of regulating both the technology itself and the images that it's capable of producing.
Now, an issue that's come up, and again, this is in your paper a couple of years back, there's been a debate over a depiction of an actual person using deepfakes. We're talking about adults in that case. Is there potentially a difference of the person creating child sexual abuse material with AI representing an actual child in particular and a resemblance to that child versus, I guess, a generic image of a child?
Yes, that's an absolutely a different issue here. So the appellate court in this case noted that the government conceded that we're not dealing with something that depicts an identifiable child or is even linked to one. Now, I would question whether that's actually true, in the sense that I'm sure that there are images of children. There may even be sexual abuse images in the data that trained this model. But nevertheless, that's the sort of facts that we're accepting for the purposes of this case. That says nothing about depictions of particular identifiable individuals, whether they're adults or children.
We're talking about a federal court ruling on AI-generated child sexual abuse material. The legal implications for a Wisconsin law banning it, our guest is UW Law School Assistant Professor Ben Sobel. Attorneys general around the country very interested in this issue. If nothing else, they are seeing a lot more reports of material. And then they have to evaluate, if this court ruling stands, if they're looking at possession, is this material actual imagery of actual children, or is it AI-generated imagery of fictitious children? That may be a very important legal distinction. How do they try to make that distinction to know this is prosecutable, this is not?
Right. So, you know, The particulars of that are you know, probably better directed to someone with more like forensic experience than me. What I can say is that there are a few different concerns here that are worth disentangling. So one is the concern that the proliferation of this hyper-realistic media will overrun existing infrastructure for identifying and reporting child sexual abuse, so tip lines and stuff. And it does seem like that infrastructure is really strained under this flood of new imagery. A separate question is whether this kind of imagery makes it more difficult to prove cases against defendants for possession of actual depictions of child sexual abuse. That was forecasted around the time of that Supreme Court case I mentioned about 20 years ago, and it did not come to pass. It may be different as the technology gets more and more realistic. A final third point, or a third harm worth identifying, is separate from how this type of media complicates prosecution or complicates efforts to identify abuse in the first instance, is the question of prohibiting it simply because it's believed to be antisocial and wrong, regardless of the effects that it has on those other things. So there are many different debates going on. The third one is about obscenity and sort of public decency and the appropriate media for people to consume and possess. That's distinct from efforts to preserve existing prosecution frameworks and abuse identification frameworks.
Looking at the law as it stands here in Wisconsin, do you think lawmakers should be revisiting our laws in light of this court decision?
I don't think that this court decision is an obstacle to enforcing the law on the Wisconsin books, except insofar as it pertains to private possession in the home. And I'll end my answer there.
Is there an avenue to regulate AI companies, AI providers, and say you have to make sure that your systems can't be used to produce this kind of material, even if ultimately we say possession by that individual is not prosecutable? We could have a law that would pass a First Amendment test that says you could be prosecuted if you don't have safeguards in your tools to make sure people can't use it for this.
Well, the first thing I'll say is that I think most companies have a pretty strong incentive to ensure that their tools don't behave like this in the first instance. And so I believe that they almost certainly have those kinds of safeguards in place just on their own volition. If we're dealing with media that is obscene, is not protected by the First Amendment, then I think that there's less of a problem. If you're dealing with rules that would restrict what sorts of constitutionally protected media AI could generate, that might be more problematic. But since the statutes at issue here, whether the Wisconsin one or the federal one, are limited to obscene media, I think that's less worrisome.
Okay. We know the big name AI companies, and as you said, they have a powerful incentive to try to not have their names attached to this kind of material. A group of hackers in Moscow, China, wherever in the world, don't have that disincentive necessarily. They want to put out what they want to the world and then there's no walls really in the internet. Is there a way to regulate that sort of open source software to make sure people can't use it for this kind of material?
Right. I think that that remains a more difficult problem, particularly if you're dealing with people, like in your example, that are outside of the jurisdiction of the United States. And so I think the answer is that we would face a similar problem that is faced with the enforcement of child sexual abuse laws more generally, which is that there may be wrongdoers outside of the reach of U.S. law enforcement.
Now, you could tell I'm a little overwhelmed by the complexity of the First Amendment case law on this, the technology itself. Is there an aspect of this that I haven't even brought up, right, that you think is important that people, lawmakers and others, be thinking about on these issues?
I think it's worth emphasizing, again, the narrowness of the ruling that we're dealing with. And I also think it's worth disentangling the sorts of arguments that are being made. And of course, it is the job of lawyers to muster as many different arguments that are compelling in favor of their position. But the arguments in favor of regulating this material, because it leads to downstream harms, for example, facilitating the grooming of children or encouraging people to commit sexual abuse crimes, those are different from regulating the media in itself because it is obscene and thus harmful. And so I think when drafting legislation or considering policy or making these arguments, it is always helpful to disentangle those distinct sorts of claims, which may have distinct, receive distinct legal treatment and are to in varying degrees empirical questions versus sort of moral and social questions.
And so, for example, if someone were to use this kind of material that they generated to blackmail a teen, say, into some kind of behavior, that is illegal already. So that doesn't necessarily lead into the core of this issue.
Indeed, and in this case, there is already there was a distribution of obscene media to a minor charge there. And so, you know, if the concern is that children in particular shouldn't have access to this material, well, yes, there is a law for addressing that. And indeed, as you suggest, we have laws like blackmail that prohibit blackmail. And of course, that's distinct from a law that prohibits virtual child sexual abuse material because it in itself is obscene.
Okay, so this is going to be working its way through the courts, through legislatures, and the technology is going to keep changing. What are you watching most closely now? What is the next development you have your eye on?
I think that we'll be very curious to see whether, for example, the Seventh Circuit rehears this case with a fuller complement of the court, whether the Supreme Court takes this case. And I think that's for the moment what I really have my eye on. For further, keeping tabs on how defendants in these cases assert defenses and whether they succeed will also be important. So measuring whether it's in fact true that prosecutions are failing because the prosecution is unable to prove that the images aren't virtual or things like that will be an important matter to keep tabs on as we assess the consequences of this developing technology.
Ben, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Ben Sobel, an assistant professor of law at the UW Law School, talking with Rob Ferret. He was with us to discuss a federal court ruling on the First Amendment rights around AI-generated child pornography and what it means for a Wisconsin law that bans those materials.